A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Here at The Guardian, we love podcasts. Not only do we make dozens of award winners ourselves, but we also write about our favourite podcasts from around the world too. Every week, our column Hear Hear, that's here as in hearing and here as in where, comes out filled with recommendations from you, our listeners. We sift through them all to find the hidden gems that the podcasting world has to offer. These podcasts are often small yet mighty productions, which you probably wouldn't find highlighted on your usual podcatchers. So, if you're looking for your next podcast or have one that you want to share with the world, sign up for our weekly Hear Hear newsletter at theguardian.com/podmail and send us an email at podcasts@theguardian.com.
The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Brexit Means, The Guardian's weekly gaze into the still reassuringly cloudy crystal ball of Brexit. In this episode, does Theresa May's new plan for a backstop agreement to prevent a hard border in Northern Ireland get anywhere closer to resolving Brexit's most concrete problem? And, perhaps equally importantly, does it say anything about the state of the Prime Minister's relations with her cabinet hardliners? Will a new poll on what people in Northern Ireland want from Brexit have any influence on the whole process? And how seriously should we take rumours starting to circulate at Westminster about, heaven help us, autumn elections? And with me to discuss all this in the studio are Sonia Soda, The Observer's chief leader writer and a Guardian comment desk regular, and on the line from Brussels, Dan Boffey, The Guardian's bureau chief there. Welcome to both of you. Dan, if I can start with you, this backstop business. Just to remind listeners first, the government has still to decide which of its two post-Brexit customs arrangements to avoid a hard border in Ireland, both of which, of course, the EU has already rejected, it wants to go for, either the customs partnership or this high-tech MaxFAC option. So what we're talking about here, aren't we, is this so-called backstop arrangement. In other words, what will come about if no other mutually acceptable solution to the Irish border impasse can actually be found. Now, Dan, you were at the Sofia EU summit last week where this new plan was sort of first touted around. Could you just talk us through it a little bit? And just to remind us, what is the current backstop arrangement? How did it come to be in the withdrawal agreement that was signed last year? And what's different now?
Yes, so bear with me, this is quite convoluted, but you remember the first year of the negotiations were three big subjects: citizens' rights, divorce bill, and how to avoid the border on the island of Ireland. Mm-hmm. Last December, the EU and the UK, in order to sort of move things on from those big topics, signed something called the Joint Report. They dealt with those three issues. And after much drama, largely due to the DUP throwing a spanner in the works at the last minute, and I'll get to that in a second, it was agreed, in terms of the Irish border, if a free trade deal, a future free trade deal between the EU and the UK, or technological solutions, bespoke technological solutions, didn't solve the problem of avoiding a hard border on the island of Ireland, then there would this be this backstop which would come into force. And that basically would be that Northern Ireland would stay in the customs union and much of the rules that govern the single market. So essentially, Northern Ireland would essentially pretty much stay in the EU, but without a say in the rules. Now, here's where the DUP got pretty angry. They got wind of this, and the only way May got this through the DUP, who, remember, give Theresa May her working majority in Parliament, was by promising in something paragraph 50 of the Joint Report,
right,
that there would be no, this did not mean there would be a border in the Irish Sea. So the Northern Ireland staying in the customs union, the single market, would not mean there'll be a border in the Irish Sea between the rest of the UK and Northern Ireland. So it was very vague how this was going to happen. It wasn't at all fleshed out, and the EU didn't really understand it. And so in March, when the EU published their legally operable backstop. They just focused entirely on what it would mean for Northern Ireland staying in the customs union, staying in the single market. They ignored paragraph 50. They ignored that was an internal agreement between the UK and the UK government, the DUP. They ignored that entirely. So when the DUP saw this legal piece of work, they were furious. And Theresa May had to say, oh, no British Prime Minister would ever agree to this backstop. We'll come up with a different backstop that stays true to the original joint report. The two paragraphs I've mentioned, the one that Northern Ireland stays in the customs union and single market, but also paragraph 50, the UK will not allow border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK. And essentially the story ever since has been Theresa May trying to find a backstop that the Cabinet will agree to, that the DUP will agree to, that the EU will agree to. What she suggested is that the UK, after the transition period, will for a time-limited period stay in the customs union. She has suggested, Leah Radvin, Sir Sophia, there's a summit on Thursday where Theresa May sort of did a kind of below the radar. She didn't tell me about it. She kept going around speaking to EU leaders about this. She didn't advertise it very, very heavily at all and talking to Donald Tusk about this. And she was saying, this is what we want to do. And it suggested also that somehow the UK would also stay in single market legislation for a time-limited period as well to avoid that border on the island of Ireland.
And what was the response from Veronica?
Ireland are desperate for a solution, and the idea of the UK staying in the customs union single market is fantastic. They were very keen for a transition period to be for 10 years plus, if possible. So they were kind of warm to it, a bit concerned that Theresa May didn't quite seem to understand that just staying in the customs union wouldn't solve the problem, that she needed to explain what part of the single market legislation the UK would stay in. So they were quite open to it. Donald Tusk, when Theresa May presented this, she wanted some kind of reassurance that this would crack things on in June. There's a big European Council summit in June. After that, hopefully things will get really serious on trade. There'll be a political declaration between the EU and UK on trade, and things get very serious. She wanted some reassurance that this backstop would crack things in June.
Would sort of clear the path for progress
clear the path,
towards
exactly.
that.
But yeah. He wasn't giving it. He was saying, no, look, you've got to write it down. Because all this is verbal. I mean, this has kind of been the way for the UK negotiations from day one. It's kind of they tend to do things verbally rather than writing things down, and that's not the EU way. So they're saying, look, no, you've got to write it down, and there is some considerable concerns about the proposal. It's classic cherry-picking.
Exactly. We'll come back to that in a second. So I just want to turn to Sonia now and ask you, Sonia, a little bit about the sort of what the domestic, in a bit of domestic sort of tea leaf reading about what this might mean, because some people have seen in this new plan whatever, as Dan was saying, anyone outside the UK thinks of it. Some people have seen sort of a bit of evidence in there that might be winning the kind of cabinet power struggle. Because, I mean, it is interesting, isn't it, that she managed to persuade people like Boris Johnson and Michael Gove, who, are the most kind of, I suppose, prominent proponents of a kind of fast, clean break with the EU. I mean, they're on board with it. They've said, as long as it doesn't last for too long. There's no immediate talk of a sort of a leadership challenge, which there had been with this in prospect. What's your take on where the cabinet is now? Is May gaining the upper hand?
So I don't think it's changed that much actually in the last 12 months. And I think if you look at what's characterised the Brexiters' sort of response to May's proposals and May's fudges, it's really quite consistent. So first of all, there's a huge fuss made out about it. Everyone says these are the red lines. David Davis, threatens to resign. Boris Johnson might say he's going to walk away from it all. So there's a huge amount of hot air and fuss. And then eventually, some weeks down the line, people seem to fall behind the Prime Minister. So we saw that happen with the divorce bill, for example. We had lots of we will not accept paying the EU this million number of euros. And actually, people in the end did fall into line behind the Prime Minister. And I think that's because, the sort of irony of Theresa May's situation is she is a weak leader in many ways, but she has one source of authority with her cabinet. And I think, we might come on to this later. That is that no one really wants a general election in her party. And so people want to rock the boat. They want to rock the boat enough to pull her towards their position. So she's sort of trying to, create this fudge between sort of on the one hand, people like, Nicky Morgan and Anna Soubry on the sort of Remainy side of her party with more fervent Brexiteers like Jacob Rees-Mogg. She's sort of trying to carve a sort of fudge that goes between them, that holds to party together. And, you know, so in the one sense, people want to make a lot of noise and try and drag that fudge more towards their position. But in the end, I think when it comes down to it, you know, they will fall into line because nobody really wants to take the mantle from her right now, I think, at what is quite an awkward time. I think if you look at kind of Boris Johnson, does he really want to be Prime Minister now? I seriously doubt that.
So if that is the case, and she knows that everybody will eventually fall into line behind her, why the need for all this sort of delicate manoeuvring and endless negotiation?
I think that's a good question. I think a lot of it is sort of, you know, face off between sort of the two sides of her party and herself. And I think some of it would just come down to the fact that this has always been an issue that's racked the Conservative Party. And it was sort of, you know, it was kind of put to bed for a little while, perhaps, by, you know, in the early stages of David Cameron's tenure as Prime Minister. But Europe has always been the issue that gets the Conservative Party. So I think she has enough authority to sort of hold off on a general election, but she
needs to at least pay lip service
yes,
to that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. I feel like she's kind of suspended in this very uncomfortable sort of place where she doesn't really have the authority to show leadership, but no one really wants to see her go as well, which right. leads to this kind of very uncomfortable, you know, to-ing and fro-ing, yeah. particularly between her and the Brexiteers and her party.
Yeah, yeah, and it's pretty uncomfortable for Europe, obviously, as well, Dan. Just back to this sort of backstop proposal. As you mentioned, it does raise the prospect of the UK staying in the customs union, or at least bits of it, for a very long time. I mean, perhaps many years, up to a decade, as you said, after March 2019 and the end of the transition period 20 months or so later. And in order for that situation to come to an end, of course, there's going to have to be a very deep and special trade relationship indeed. Otherwise, you're just landed back with the same problem of the Irish border. Now, and as far as I understand it, the problem is that the EU really doesn't see that kind of relationship as being possible because of the UK's red lines. And also, any kind of extension of that kind of length, I mean, if you're talking a decade or so, you know, that would basically more or less see Britain staying in the customs union kind of by the back door. I mean, that would be cherry picking, wouldn't it? I mean, that would be kind of the whole sort of pick and mix approach that the EU has ruled out from the start. If there's the Brussels line really is, if there's going to be any extension, it has to be an extension of everything, just like the transition period. You know, all the rules and all the freedoms have to be observed. It's really a status quo deal. Is that really where we are? So, I mean, does this backstop that might see Britain staying in for a long time actually stand a chance of being acceptable to the EU?
It's been it's been quite a muted response so far from the EU. You know, concerns were raised, but no one's really come out and said anything. And I think that's, one EU official did say to me that the last thing Theresa May needs at the moment is sort of an episode of Brit bashing. Her position's uncomfortable enough as it is. But in reality, I think that's precisely what you say. I can't see how this is possibly acceptable. It is very much of the cherry-picking mode. I can see they will put into the withdrawal agreement an extension clause so the transition period could be extended, and that could be extended for a bit. But even then, because it's part of the Article 50 withdrawal agreement, it has to be quite tight and time-limited. It can't go on forever. The Article 50 withdrawal agreement is about withdrawal. It's not about the future relationship. So it can't be forever and a day. It has to be quite short. Maybe an extra year, possibly, at max, people are talking. So I can see that maybe as a solution. But at the moment, I can't see how Theresa May's backstop is going to get them through June. It's troubling.
OK. All right. Well, that sounds promising. Let's move on a little bit. We shouldn't forget ever that this is also about real people. And there was a very revealing opinion poll this week, which showed that Northern Ireland, the subject of everything that we've been talking about, this whole backstop thing is obviously all to do with Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland and the border between them. Northern Ireland, which voted 56% to remain and 44% to leave in the 2016 referendum, would now vote, ask the same question, 69% to 31% in favour of staying. Now, it also showed there was very substantial support for staying in the customs union and the single market, and it showed intense opposition to north-south and east-west border checks. Those are the checks between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK that Dan was talking about earlier. Plus, even more alarmingly, significant support for illegal or extreme protests against any kind of border controls, particularly among Catholics, that was. Now, Sonia, that seems to me to be actually possibly quite a big deal, doesn't it? I mean, for one thing, it runs pretty much completely counter to the DUP's position, which, as Dan was saying, is what guarantees Theresa May's majority. Now, David Davis, the Brexit Secretary, made only his second, and it was a very low-profile visit to the Irish border this week. Jacob Rees-Mogg last week said some sort of slightly scandalous remarks that, you know, he felt he didn't need to visit the border at all in order to understand the issues there. Do you think this is the issue that's going to come back to bite the government really seriously, that they have just underestimated the significance of this problem?
Yes, well, I think, you know, when we've really seen the Irish border dominate all of the coverage, all of the talks in recent weeks, and in some ways I think there were lots of people who predicted this, and in our national debate we didn't spend a huge amount of time debating the consequences of Brexit for Ireland, but there were people even back then before we voted who said this is going to be absolutely massive, and I think it is, and I think it's because actually Theresa May's right. I don't think a prime minister can, you know, a British prime minister could countenance the return of a hard border with border infrastructure between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And I also think it would be completely unacceptable for a British prime minister to sort of see a border crop up in the middle of the Irish Sea. So in many ways, I think, you know, what this polling reflects in terms of public opinion in Northern Ireland, it shows that people are against a border infrastructure, you know, on the island of Ireland, but also in the Irish Sea. And I think that kind of reflects where a prime minister really has to be. And I don't think it's a surprise in many ways that sort of public opinion has shifted in Northern Ireland, because I think there has been so much more debate about this. And I think it's becoming clearer exactly what Brexit would mean. And I think, you know, I don't even think it's so much that the shift in public opinion in Northern Ireland is really going to sort of be what changes the Prime Minister's mind about this, because I think, you know, we've seen public opinion in Scotland. I just don't think public opinion in the devolved nations, as sad as it is, I just don't think it weighs that much on the Prime Minister's mind. I think she's much more concerned about what's going on in her cabinet. But I do think that the public opinion there reflects the hard reality of this conundrum that just doesn't seem to have a solution. So I think it's entirely plausible that the border question in Ireland is what shapes what Brexit means for us going forward. And I myself, I just can't see what the solution
is. It's very hard to see a way out, isn't it? It really is. Yeah. Do you think there's any prospect of, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, that and it seems fairly clear that public opinion in Ireland might have shifted because the scale and the complexity and the, you know, the sort of impossibility of the problem is coming more and more into focus. Is there any possibility of a similar kind of swing in public opinion in England specifically, do you think, as those issues, as the complexity of the whole thing becomes clearer and clearer?
I mean, I don't think we've seen that shift in public opinion yet. Could it happen? It's really hard to know. I mean, I spent a bit of time thinking about what might create a shift in public opinion. And I think what might create a shift might be some political leadership that's really honest, that says to the country, look, you voted for this. We want to deliver what you voted for. But actually, there are some things that are incredibly complex here, which means that there are some really difficult trade-offs. And for me, that's one of the biggest problems about Theresa May's premiership. She's continued to sort of say to the public, essentially, look, we can have it all. We can have our cake and eat it. And I think that stores up a lot of scope for public anger and backlash further down the line. And that's very dangerous, because that's the sort of stuff that sows the seeds for a sort of UKIP kind of far right resurgence. So I think political leadership might change the public's minds, but it's hard to see what else might in some ways, because I just don't think people in England will pay the same attention to the debate about Northern Ireland with all its intricacies. It's, I mean, it's so complex. My head hurt after I heard Dan take us through that all. I don't think, you know, members of the public in England pay the same amount of attention to that debate as people in Northern Ireland, who are obviously much more immediately affected by it. And if the economy starts to experience problems, I mean, we already are seeing issues, you know, people chalk it up to things that weren't about the thing that they voted for and believed in. So I find it quite hard to sort of see how public opinion is going to shift unless we see a shift in our political leadership. And it really doesn't seem like Theresa May is a woman who's going to deliver that.
Right. Right. OK, Dan, now you mentioned the summit this June, the next month's summit, the June summit a little bit earlier. I mean, is that going to be the... So now this whole question of Northern Ireland and the border is going to be the big topic of conversation there? And what else still needs to be sorted out? Because, you know, we tend to forget there's quite a lot. I mean, I think Michel Barnier was saying last week there's still 25% of his chart still to be kind of filled in with green, isn't there? What's still left and how important is the Irish question going to be?
Yes, no, the 25% thing is he also says UK's leaving 750 international agreements. It's one of the things he just repeats over and over
ad infinitum.
But within the 25%, there are things, for example, Euratom. Theresa May said she wants to have an association agreement with Euratom. So that needs to be sorted out. Then there's governance of the withdrawal agreement. Who's the final arbiter?
That's the ECJ question.
Yes, so the European Union say if somebody has a problem with the withdrawal agreement and thinks it's been defaulted in some way, that they should be able to go to the ECJ to get a judgment. The UK, they're pushing against that. We shouldn't be under the ECJ in any way after Brexit. And then there's other little bits, things like geographical indications. So the French are very keen for us to respect their champagne and cheeses post-Brexit. And we're actually holding back on that at the moment. We're holding back on talking about that.
Okay.
It's a bit of leverage. So there's little bits, but it's all going to be about Northern Ireland and whether Ireland are satisfied and whether the EU are satisfied that it's not, that this backstop isn't cherry-picking. And at the moment, yeah, it doesn't feel that great. Talks of crisis and maybe some kind of emergency European Council after June, maybe.
Really?
All sorts of
Really? Is that really that's being discussed in the corridors of Brussels? The prospect of the whole thing blowing up.
Real worry that things are going to could. I mean, at the Sofia summit, Leo Varadkar did say, you know, if we don't have something by June, significant progress by June, then we have to question whether a withdrawal agreement is possible at all, and that would be a disaster on both sides. So anything that can avoid that sort of chatter is helpful. So, but yeah, Northern Ireland, it's all about Northern Ireland.
It'll all be about Northern Ireland. Yeah, it really is the issue where the Brexit dream meets the Brexit reality, really. Sonia, so is that, I mean, finally back to you then. Is that what's driving then, do you think, this possibility of the whole June summit blowing up in the government's face? Is that what's driving this? Because there has been an unusual level of speculation and rumour, hasn't there, the last few days about the possibility of a snap election in the UK.
Oh, the snap election. It's that thing that just keeps coming back to haunt us and never seems to materialise. So I think there's no chance. I mean, maybe I will be on your podcast in a couple of months eating a hat or something similar. But I think there's no chance of a general election in the autumn. I don't think anyone in the Conservative Party really wants a general election. I think there's a huge amount of uncertainty about what would happen.
They have got a 4-point poll lead.
They do, but I mean, goodness, look what happened to Theresa May's poll lead. And I think that's the thing about where we are in this current moment. Huge political uncertainty. No one really knows whether local election results are predictive of how you would do in a general election anymore. And look how much things changed in the general election a year ago. So I don't think anyone really wants a general election. I think all the talk of a snap general election, it's just part of this pantomime of, you know, and when you look at where it's coming from backbench Tory Brexiteers who sort, you know, are using it to exert pressure on the Prime Minister. But I think she should call their bluff because no one really wants a general election. And I think there are some Tory MPs who would be worried about losing their seats. I think there's a lot of uncertainty about, you know, Jeremy Corbyn. Could he do better than last time? Maybe not. But, you know, it's really all up for grabs. Yeah. So I would be really shocked if we ended up having another election later this year.
OK, well, finally, a small piece of good news. OK, well, that's about it for this week. Thank you both very much, Sonia and Dan, for joining me. Please do subscribe, review on all your favourite podcatchers and join the discussion on Twitter. You just need to search for Guardian Podcasts. And you can email us too, of course, at brexitpodcast. That's all one word, brexitpodcast@theguardian.com. Till next week, then. I'm John Henley. The producer was Simon Barnard. This was Brexit Means. And thank you very much for listening.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Brought to you by Lexus. Some things do more than their stated functions, because exceptional things inspire you to do exceptional things. To this select list, we add the all-new Lexus GX. With its exceptional capability, you'll see possibilities you never knew existed, sending you far outside your comfort zone. But as much as the GX challenges you, it also spoils you. Its intuitive technology and luxurious features mean that wherever you go, you'll never go without. Live up to it. The all-new Lexus GX.